are tuned in to Mid-Morning Empowerment here on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now it's time for us to get into our mental health chat, and we're moving on to a new subject. As you all know, we were talking about depression last month, and now we're moving on to anxiety, another disorder that is often misunderstood, and everyone thinks they have anxiety. I'll tell you that every time something goes wrong, any kind of inconvenience that we experience, oh, I'm so anxious, I have such anxiety. And this is a normal part of life, right? But when it becomes persistent and overwhelming and disrupts daily activities, it may be more than just occasional stress. Now, generalized anxiety disorder, that is GAD, is like having a mind that's constantly scanning for threats, even when everything is fine. It can turn small worries into endless spirals of fear, affecting relationships and productivity and overall well-being. But how do we distinguish between normal worry that everybody experiences and an actual anxiety disorder? And more importantly, what can be done about it? And so we have guiding us through this conversation, Perlene Coughlin from the Vista Clinic. Thank you so much for joining us, Perlene. Good morning and welcome to the Mid-Morning Empowerment.
Good morning, Bongi and all our listeners. It's such a pleasure to be with you this morning.
We're so grateful to have you sharing your time with us on this subject. Please speak to us a little bit about GAD and some of the key symptoms that differentiate from normal stress.
Awesome. Thanks, Bongi. So when we look at GAD, also generalized anxiety disorder, the main difference between the two is that GAD is a clinical mental health condition, while stress is a very natural response to external pressures. So with GAD, we find that someone has excessive anxiety and worry, and it can be about a number of things like work, school, and oftentimes individuals may find it very difficult to control the worry. With this is also, and I think you mentioned the word just now, there's persistency in what we experience. So persistent restlessness or feeling on edge. People like that may be feeling easily fatigued if they find it difficult concentrating. And also sometimes just the mind feels like it's blank. There's a lot of irritability, often muscle tension and sleeping disturbances. So someone may fall asleep, but they may struggle to stay asleep as well. And we find that, you know, it makes it very difficult to work or to go to school. And other areas of life is also impacted when we have all these worry and anxiety because of the intensity thereof. And then on the other hand, stress, and this is the main difference between the two. Stress, there is a temporary nervousness, and the key word here is temporary. There's temporary nervousness, tension, irritability, headaches, and it's usually manageable, and what we find is that it usually goes away once the stressor is gone as well.
Right, right. Sure, that sounds exhausting, hey?
It is. It can be extremely exhausting, extremely daunting, and that is why I like when you say, you know, people can easily say, I'm so anxious or I have anxiety today. It is quite a journey for many people and quite a daunting one as well.
Wow, wow. Now, how does it actually affect, how does GAD affect decision-making and daily functioning?
It does, I promise you. Why? Because many people tend to overthink and they become very indecisive. So they worry constantly about what is the outcome going to be if I make a certain decision, or they can also just be fear of making mistakes in a decision, where there's a heightened fear of negative consequences or even regret. And oftentimes they seek reassurance from others, or they avoid in its entirety making any decision. While on the other hand, also they may find it very difficult to concentrate. They feel fatigued, restless. Once again, muscle tension, headaches, and gastrointestinal issues often also come to the fore. So people struggle at work, in relationships and so on. It makes it really, really difficult.
Sure, because you're just constantly worried about what the outcome is going to be. What if I should have gone that way? So either way, even if you do make the right decision, you're constantly thinking maybe the other decision could have been better, or
Absolutely. And that is often what leads to avoidance eventually. Someone will just, and we'll say, for example, someone is procrastinating, but that may not be that they're procrastinating. It's just that they avoid making a decision because they're so concerned about the outcome.
Oh, wow. Oh, my. I had not thought about the procrastination aspect. So because you don't want to make a mistake, you can't even make a decision at all. You're just stuck in limbo.
Absolutely. It feels like that you're stuck in limbo, yes.
Mm, which also creates more anxiety.
Yes, it does. Unfortunately, it does. And that is why the impact on, you know, social interaction and work relationships and family relationships are also in the end then affected.
Right, right. Now, what are some common triggers for GAD and how can they be managed?
Some common triggers for GAD we'll find is that if someone is constantly experiencing stressful life events like work pressure or there's a job loss or financial problems or relationship conflicts like breakups or just family issues, you know, major life changes. For example, if someone moves to another country or moves to another province, marriage can also be a challenge, having children or new baby. And oftentimes people feel very uncertain and that they don't have control over what is happening. So they, you know, they feel that they have to control sometimes even what happens on a global level. Or if someone is really perfectionistic and they fear failure.
Yeah.
Also, health concerns is another big one, where managing long-term illnesses can create tremendous anxiety in many people. You know, am I going to make this? Will I still live long enough to make it? Will I be there for other people and so on? Substance use is another one, where people have excessive intake of caffeine or alcohol. And also some medication can trigger also or exacerbate the symptoms of anxiety.
Really?
Work with pressure, yes. Work or school pressure, where students feel, you know, they have tight deadlines.
Yes.
And oftentimes they have high expectations. And added to that is not only the expectations of the hold of themselves, but also the expectations that their parents hold of them, or even teachers. And oftentimes that goes ahead with or along with the fear of failure for many students, for example. Another trigger is relationship conflicts. You know, when people have arguments with partners, with friends, or family members, and with that is often the idea that the relationship is going to end and that they will feel that they have been the cause of the end of the relationship.
Mm.
So relationship conflict oftentimes is a very big trigger for GAD as well. And I think, Bongi, another one that I'd like to mention, sorry.
Continue.
Another one which I'd like to mention is constant exposure to social media and news. Oftentimes people will say, no, but, you know, it relaxes me and I find it very entertaining. But it can increase anxiety if we're exposed to constant negative information. Where people form ideas about how things are going to work out. If my life doesn't look like this, then I'm not good enough and so on.
Wow. So coming to some of the examples that you gave, some of those triggers like relationship problems or pressure with your academics and things like that, or tight deadlines, those are triggers. We're looking at them from the perspective of them as triggers. And I'm wondering if once the thing has passed, so let's say finally you write your matric exams and you've aced everything, or you've met your deadline, you've done a good job. If it's a trigger, does that mean that once I have managed to get through this hurdle, get over this hurdle, that the anxiety then goes away? Or if, for example, a romantic relationship that has been toxic and very difficult and triggering my anxiety, once that relationship comes to an end, how does the anxiety continue to plague me even after that? How does that happen?
So it could be that someone, for example, is they're really suffering with anxiety, and it may be that they've even been diagnosed with anxiety. So for someone like that, it's everything in their lives becomes a problem or becomes a challenge, not only the one event. But for someone who is temporarily exposed, for them, once the trigger is gone, then the symptoms will also. So someone who struggles, who has been diagnosed with GAD, for example, they will constantly find something to worry about. They will look for things to worry about.
Sure.
And they will often wonder, if it's not this one that is not working, then there must be something else that is not going to work. So there is this consistency, the persistence of symptoms that we find due to the fact that someone constantly looks for something.
Right.
It's almost like they're looking for something to worry about.
Right.
There may be nothing, or the trigger may be gone, but then something else will come up.
Is it because that state of anxiety has because of that prolonged state of anxiety? It has become someone's new normal.
It's becoming new normal, absolutely. This is how they function. This is how they manage. Although for many people, it's actually dysfunctional.
Yes.
They cannot really function optimally, whether it be in work, in relationships, in school, because this is their normal way for them. This is their perception, but it may actually be dysfunctional.
My goodness. All right. Now, why do some people develop GAD while others don't, even under similar circumstances? Like you mentioned, especially if you look at some of the triggers that you've mentioned, they are things that everybody faces. Everyone has deadlines. Everyone has tough days at school and difficult times in relationships and, different medications. Why does it affect some people and not others?
With GAD, Tongi, and why some people develop it and others not. We found, for example, that some people may have what we call genetic predisposition,
okay,
where they inherit a higher likelihood of developing anxiety disorder. And there's quite a few studies which suggest that GAD runs in families and that genetics may influence how the brain regulates fear and stress.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons. Another one is just brain chemistry. It plays a role because when there are differences in, let's say, the levels of neurotransmitters, it can impact how people experience and also how they regulate anxiety. And that is why for many people, depending on the intensity and the severity of the diagnosis, they may need medication to help those neurotransmitters function normally. And then also just a person's personality and temperament. So some people may have a more sensitive temperament,
mm-hmm.
Where they are very highly conscientious, or they may be perfectionistic. And this also places them at a higher risk of them developing experiencing symptoms of GAD, than other people. Some people also have, or they develop healthy coping mechanisms, and they're just naturally more resilient than others. And we find people like that. They enjoy problem solving, actually, and they will seek social support, and they also practice mindfulness, which we call self-awareness.
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, there are people who may have maladaptive coping, where they avoid stressful situations, and then engage in excessive worry, which we spoke about earlier as well,
mm-hmm.
and that serves as a dysfunction to them at the end of the day. Sometimes also early life experiences and trauma, we find that people are also prone to develop GAD. Where you have, for example, overprotective parents or trauma at a very young age or neglect or just chronic stress where once again it's persistent and this person is constantly exposed to an environment which is highly stressful and not knowing how to cope with what is going on.
Yeah. Wow, interesting. Now, what treatment options are available for those who might be struggling with GAD?
So the first line of treatment, we'd always suggest is therapy. So cognitive behavior therapy would be one way.
Mm-hmm.
It's found that cognitive behavior therapy is one of the most effective and also widely used treatments for GAD.
Mm-hmm.
And what CBT does is it helps individuals to challenge their irrational fears and worries. And with that therapy, they also learn how to develop healthier thought patterns. And we find in therapy, for example, the therapist can teach them how to relax or teach them relaxation techniques and also other coping strategies. But the main thing with CBT is how to work with the thoughts, because that is where everything stems from.
Yeah.
Other types of therapy also includes what we call acceptance and commitment therapy.
Okay.
And here, when someone does this type of therapy, they learn to accept anxiety and fight it,
mm-hmm.
especially if it's something that you've been living with for a very long time.
Yeah.
Teaching someone how to deal with it more is more important than fighting the idea that I have to fight what is going on.
Right.
And then there's also mindfulness-based therapy, where techniques are learned to reduce excessive worry. And what happens in this type of therapy is that the person becomes aware of how they usually respond and how they can learn to change that behavior when they experience, for example, an anxiety attack or panic attack, as we know it as well.
Okay.
And then for more you know, for moderate to more severe cases, doctors may prescribe medication. And then lifestyle changes is very important as well, Bongiwe. Self-help strategies, you know, like exercising is important, following a healthy diet, adequate sleep, relaxation techniques, and also then limiting your exposure to news and social media.
Right.
Those would all be ways for treatment that we usually encourage people to engage with.
Right, right. That's beautiful. I think that one is so important, even if you have not been diagnosed with the anxiety disorder, just for the sake of peace, just for the sake of your own personal peace. It's so important that we set those boundaries for ourselves, for our own health. Is this something that has to be clinically diagnosed?
Yes, absolutely. So it's very important that someone speaks to a therapist or a psychiatrist so that they can help them with diagnosis. We often encourage people not to self-diagnose.
Right.
Because often you find people going out using medication, which is not prescribed and may not be so useful. But it's good if you see a doctor, and doctor will look at what the symptoms are, over which period of time has this person experienced the symptoms, what life events has happened at the time. And this is all taken into consideration when a diagnosis is made at the end of the day. So it's good not to self-diagnose.
Got it. Got it. Well, I look forward to continuing on with this conversation. Pearline, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I think this has been a good start. And for all the listeners out there, if you have any questions that you'd like us to address in our talk on anxiety, please do send those through. +27 7347 0352 0. Pearline, I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks, Bongi.
All right.
You are tuned into Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.